Beloved by Toni Morrison. As part of our American Lit Snapshot series, this is just a study of chapter one. And in many ways, this is not a great pick to just do one chapter of this novel. So we will spend a decent amount of time and potentially an extra day of class going over the plot, as well as who Toni Morrison was and her importance in not just American literature, but global literature, so that we gain a better perspective of this novel's place in the American literary canon, as well as Toni Morrison's place in the history of writers, just internationally, not just in the American sense. But what we want to talk about here, and this is not an easy novel, just look at one chapter and think that we gain a good perspective, but we need to think about this concept of what it means to be haunted and the role of trauma. Those two ideas both are go hand in hand with each other, but there's a little different nuance to both. We can be haunted physically by our decisions, by our actions, by the words and thoughts of others. We can be scarred in many ways, similar to being haunted. But being haunted does not necessarily mean that there is trauma. Haunted could just be a reactionary thought process connected to wishing things had been different, wishing a different decision could be made, wishing that life could have turned out more positively, or just in general different. But when a haunted situation, or when someone feels haunted and it's connected with actual trauma, like we see here with Setha and her family and the men involved, and everyone in this story has had a traumatic experience and multiple traumatic experiences. Beloved tells the story of former slaves who have escaped to now live in a free state. And when we see them by 1873, while slavery has been abolished, we are still at a point where the scars of slavery are not just something that is being passed down in a generational sense. We are still in the first person perspective of the horrors of slavery. They're not just memories. They're not stories being shared. They're not attitudes and thoughts and philosophies that are being passed down. They are first person experiences. And those first person experiences shape who these people are. It shapes their decision making. It shapes not just how they view their history, but how they view their present and how it impacts their decision making for the future. Setha was put into a situation where her family had to be separated for her to escape. The only child left living with her is her daughter, Denver, who she was the one who was in her belly as she made her way to a free state. In this first chapter, it's established that the home they live in is haunted by a ghost. The ghost of the two-year-old daughter who Setha had to kill, fearing that both Setha herself and her children were going to be thrown back into slavery. Her decision was to try to kill her children. Only did she end up killing her two-year-old. The other children were able to escape this, as well as eventually all of them escaping any return to slavery. We have to keep this in mind, that that action is impossible to move past. Killing her daughter out of love, out of not wanting her to go through what she went through, but then not being put back into slavery, having the other children live along with you. She had obviously birthed Denver at a later date. But the scarring of that action, the purchasing of the headstone, everything goes along with that, which we'll cover in class. The word beloved being the only word on the headstone, which was fitting, as it's pointed out. This was a child she loved so very much. The idea of her being damaged by what she went through, she'd rather have her not be alive, and that is what she did. But it doesn't mean that the scars of that decision weren't going to be ever present. And the house being physically haunted by the baby's ghost, and then reappearing depends how you want to look at it, later in the novel, in a physical embodiment as a human. And there are a couple different ways to look at it, which we won't cover today. But I want us to really focus on this idea that the decision made was out of love and it had terrible consequences. But Setha's life up until that point had been nothing but negative trauma. And the idea of something that she loves so dearly, her daughter, going through what she went through. It was never an easy decision. There was no easy decisions. There was no right decision. But she made a decision to keep her daughter safe. But that decision left her with the scars of the decision. So when we see these characters, when we're dealing with the grandmother character, we're dealing with Setha herself, or we're dealing with Paul D, we're dealing with the snapshots of background information that we receive about what it was like to be on these plantations. The depiction and the details Toni Morrison presents of the tree that is on Setha's back and what that both means physically and existentially and metaphorically is all something that we need to think about. This is a text that just looking at one chapter of does not do it justice beyond reading the prose itself, being impressed by the storytelling, the images, the details, the power of the narrative being created. But the overall arch of sadness, what was taken from these people by being property, what was taken from these people was the freedom of mind that what they do with their life is controlled by them and couldn't be taken away in an instant. Because we see that with Setha right away, that she does not feel like she has control. And the only control she had in that instant that we do not see in this early first chapter was to take her daughter's life so someone else couldn't take her daughter from her and put her through what she has gone through. There is joy in this novel in many ways, but it's a subtext of a larger battle with trauma. There's love in this novel, but it's marred by the presence of incredible sadness, overcoming evil, both evil behavior, evil thoughts, and the damage that has been done to all who were around slavery, and the generational pull that happens when these stories are passed down, these attitudes impact the way people interact with each other, that this is not something that just gets aged out. It gets passed down, it gets remembered, and that trauma is ever present. It's not just in the past. It's not just sort of hovering and impacting decisions in the future. It's there, much like the ghost that haunts the home 124. It's also haunting anyone related to and directly connected and even indirectly connected with slavery. On a larger scale, you could apply the ghosts of slavery to this nation, as we talked about this in American Lit, something that not only is it ever present, but it shapes and changes the scope of how people interact, how people think and see the world, but most of all, the haunting that still takes place because it occurred is not going to be aged out. It's going to be remembered. In many ways, it will be ever present.